Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
From the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom, this is The Gateway. It's Monday, October 21st. I'm Abby Larico. Farmer Charles Payne cultivated hundreds of acres of row crops for decades in western Missouri, but when his grandson Josh took over managing the property, there was a problem.
I found out I'm allergic to herbicide. My throat would swell shut 3 or 4 times a week during harvest.
We'll learn how Josh moved the family farm toward more regenerative practices, coming up after this news on The Gateway. Union leaders at Boeing say workers in Seattle have reached a negotiated proposal for a new contract 5 weeks into a strike over benefits and wages. NPR reports the walkout halted production and cost Boeing and its suppliers upwards of $100 million in its first week. Boeing also employs nearly 17,000 people across plants in St. Louis County, St. Charles, and Muskoda, Illinois. Last week, the company announced it will cut 10% of its workforce in the coming months in lieu of a plan for company-wide furloughs. The Seattle workers will vote on the new proposed contract on Wednesday. Rolla-based Phelps Health plans to take over a smaller 25-bed hospital in Dent County. St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Fentum reports the two hospitals earlier this year issued a letter of intent for Phelps to lease Salem Memorial District Hospital, which is approximately 30 miles south of Rolla.
The Salem facility is a critical access hospital, which means it's small, offers 24-hour emergency care, and serves an area without other hospitals close by. The letter of intent says that Phelps Health wants to take over operations there. Phelps CEO and president, Jason Shenefield, says he doesn't expect any Salem hospital workers to lose their jobs if the deal goes through. He says the hospital is one of few serving rural patients in South Central Missouri.
If we can help turn it around towards a break-even proposition and keep services as close to that region as possible, that's what we're hoping to gain.
A larger management system, Kansas City-based Rural Hospital Group, terminated its contract to operate the Salem Hospital last year. I'm Sarah Fentum, St. Louis Public Radio.
St. Louis University has laid off 23 staff members and cut 130 open positions. The student newspaper, The University News, reports it's part of an effort to cut costs by $20 million this fiscal year. Provost Mike Lewis said the cuts are to administrative positions and no academic roles are currently being affected. An additional $40 million of cost cutting is anticipated over the next 2 years. The federal corruption trial of former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan and a one-time confidant is poised to enter a new phase today. Dave McKinney has more.
The blockbuster racketeering, bribery, and conspiracy trial resumes today with prosecutors and defense lawyers still looking for a couple of alternate jurors. But that task is expected to only take half a day, and if that timetable holds, opening statements could begin in the courtroom of federal judge John Blakey. Government prosecutors would lay out their sprawling case for the first time to jurors, likely followed by a rebuttal opening from lawyers representing either Madigan or co-defendant Michael McLean. Both men maintain their innocence. The trial at the Dirksen Federal Building is expected to last until late December and figures to define the legacy of one of Illinois' most storied politicians. This is Dave McKinney.
Looking ahead to elections, now a preview of the races to represent two districts in St. Louis County Council. In the 2nd District, a former Parkway School Board member and an outgoing Missouri State Representative will face off for the chance to represent the parts of North and Central St. Louis County. Outgoing State Representative Gretchen Banger won a narrow Democratic primary victory. She's running against Republican Sudhir Ratode. The seat is open because Kelly Dunaway chose not to seek re-election. Bangert has run multiple campaigns for her state House seat, but she says running for a local legislative body makes her feel more involved with the community.
It's fun to have those conversations and hear about people, how important their communities are and things that are important to them that are different than the legislation at the state level.
Bangert says economic development and healing rifts on the council are her priorities. Ratode is a native of India who came to the U.S. to get an MBA. He says he decided to be his party's candidate to make a difference.
I want to do something for the community, and I hate the partisan race. I wish, you know, the politicians would all come together and work for the county.
Ratod says he will focus on making sure that business owners feel safe so they can continue to operate and expand in the district. The most competitive race for St. Louis County Council this year will be in the 6th District, which covers the southern part of the county. Republican attorney Michael Archer defeated incumbent Ernie Trakas in August. He's now facing Kevin Schartner, a former member of the Melville School Board and an engineer at Ameren. Schartner says that background taught him how to solve problems and work with people he did not personally like.
I believe we need problem solvers in our government, people that are going to represent us, who are going to put people over politics. And I don't think we've seen a ton of that at the county level.
Both men say public safety is among the top issues for their constituents, but Archer says his 18 years as a prosecutor means he has a better understanding of the issue.
I know crime. You know, I understand what has to be done and how that the police presence is.
The St. Louis County Police Association endorsed both Archer and Schartner in their primaries, but will not weigh in for the general election. Reporting on both of these previews by St. Louis Public Radio's Rachel Littman. A measure to legalize sports betting in Missouri is facing strong opposition in the run-up to the November 5th election. St. Louis Public Radio's Jason Rosenbaum explains why some casinos are helping fund the campaign to vote no on Amendment 2.
Amendment 2 would legalize sports betting and allow people to place bets on phone apps and at casinos and sports stadiums. But casinos associated with the company Caesars have provided millions of dollars to Missourians against the deceptive online gambling amendment, which is trying to defeat the measure. That group's spokeswoman, Brooke Foster, says the Caesars casino chain sees Amendment 2 as an enrichment scheme for sports betting apps FanDuel and DraftKings.
You know, they are seeing this as out-of-state entities, you know, extracting value from Missouri without giving a lot back.
FanDuel and DraftKings have spent millions to try and pass Amendment 2 in Missouri. I'm Jason Rosenbaum, St. Louis Public Radio.
Quincy, Illinois has a storied baseball history spanning over a century. The roars of crowds faded when the city's summer collegiate team was suddenly sold last year, but St. Louis Public Radio's Brian Munoz reports on the next chapter in Quincy baseball.
Summer baseball is returning to the Gem City. Springfield, Illinois-based Golden Rule Entertainment announced Friday it will bring a wooden bat team to Quincy next summer. The company also owns the Lucky Horseshoes, a team that boasted the Prospect League's largest attendance increase between the 22 and 23 seasons. Quincy Mayor Mike Trope says the partnership between the groups was a natural fit.
They want to be part of the community where they can support some of the nonprofit activities throughout the year. That's the kind of partnership that any community would love to see.
The Prospect League's owners approved the new team at its annual summit. In Quincy, I'm Brian Munoz, St. Louis Public Radio.
Think of all the things you might do differently than your grandparents' generation. How you dress, how you cook, how you communicate. Same goes for farming. Reporter Jana Rose Schleiss explores the historical context behind the generational divide in agriculture and how future-proofing some Missouri farmland has led some to ditch decades of advice.
Early on a cool September morning, farmer Josh Payne tends to his flock in Concordia, Missouri, just east of Kansas City.
See how they're already kind of lining up?
Yeah.
Ready?
Yep.
All right, let's do this.
As Payne opens the gate, about 1,000 sheep round the corner and bound into fresh grass. The pasture the flock is grazing was once corn and soybeans, along with the rest of the Payne family farm. Josh's grandfather, Charles Payne, cultivated nearly 1,000 acres of row crops for decades. But as Josh took over managing the property, that wasn't going to work.
I found out I'm allergic to herbicide. My throat would swell shut 3 or 4 times a week during harvest.
Payne wanted to transition the farm to regenerative agriculture, a movement that aims to revive farmland soil and by extension the ecosystem and the small farm economy. He hoped that by changing what and how they farmed, it would reduce the need for chemical inputs. Josh told his grandfather they should use cover crops, graze sheep, and plant an orchard. But Charles wasn't having it.
I'm like, Grandpa, we should do this. He's like, no, we're not planting trees. Literally his phrase was, I spent my whole life tearing out trees, we're not gonna go plant them now.
96-year-old Charles Payne came of age during an industrial and chemical revolution in agriculture. Like countless other Midwestern farmers, he heeded the advice from industry and government leaders to plant fence row to fence row.
And that's what we did. Tore out all the fences and hedgerows, and now I wish I had some of them back.
U.S. agriculture production tripled in the latter half of the 20th century, due in part to chemical inputs. But that came at an environmental cost. University of Missouri rural sociologist Mary Hendrickson says the way Charles Payne farmed was a result of policy, research, and methods encouraged by the industry. She says farmer skepticism or resistance to regenerative agriculture is a result of their lived experience.
I mean, there's a reason why somebody who has lived through that transition says, "Wait, you want me to go back to what?"
The advice Charles's grandchildren are getting is at times the exact opposite of what he was told in his day. Although Payne says he's had to learn to bite his tongue at times during this transition, he's happy they're farming.
Of course, it's a different way of farming, but they're on the farm, and they seem to really enjoy it.
Hendrickson says in agriculture communities especially, there exists a generational pressure to farm and to succeed doing so.
This identity as a farmer and the land and holding that for the next generation was significant for farmers.
For Charles and Josh Payne, the elders' resistance to change and the younger's desire for change were both motivated by the goal to keep the farm alive. Here's how Josh puts it.
Grandpa, you made the right decisions for your time. You were faithful to this land, to this place, to your family, but that just looks different now.
The Paynes now graze their sheep among 800 chestnut trees, and they're still finding ways to grow and adapt, most recently adding a produce garden. In Concordia, Missouri, I'm Jana Roschleis.
That story comes to us from member station KBIA in Columbia. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.